As football coaches, we're always searching for that next big idea. When you create a free USA Football account, you are opening the door to thousands of game strategies and coach development content that can spark your next game-winning play. Create your free account today at usafootball.com.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast. I'm joined by another state champion from 2017, the head football coach at Hand High School in Connecticut, Dave Mastriani. Coach, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back. I always enjoy talking to you.
Coach, well, let's take a look back at this season and think about some of those things. We've talked before here, but think about some of those things that, for you, are key takeaways from 2017.
Yeah, I think the first and foremost, I mean, we as coaches, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, the idea of culture. I really believe that culture only goes as far as your senior leadership. And this year, I was unbelievably fortunate to just have a great group of seniors. We only had 14 of them, but they were just a great group of kids. And the thing that kind of got that across to me was, I would have teachers pull me aside that, anytime they usually came to see me, it was to tell me what a football player was doing wrong. And, these people pulled me aside and said, we really enjoy rooting for you this year because you have a great bunch of seniors. And, to hear that, that means I accomplished something. I'm a big believer that wins and losses are a byproduct of who you are. And if we're developing character, if we're developing good kids, if we have good kids, then the byproduct should be wins. And that's kind of where we are with it. And so I think that was probably my biggest takeaway, was the importance of having good senior leadership to drive, a culture. So that was probably the biggest takeaway of the year. And then, let's see, other things. I mean, great to have community support. I mean, we have a tremendous football community. I mean, this state championship is actually our 12th. And it was great to see the stands filled again. It was exciting. It was a lot of fun to be around, and our kids, our community enjoyed it. So those were probably my two biggest takeaways of the year.
Coach, obviously that senior leadership and really all levels of leadership on your team are important, because it doesn't have to wait till they're seniors. But obviously there's that expectation, having been through the program for 4 years, that you get it by then. What kind of things are you doing to build that leadership with these guys when they start with you at the ninth grade level?
Yeah, it's funny, this being my first year, we didn't get a whole lot of it going. What we did do, though, was a leadership council, and basically we elected members from each of the classes to represent kind of the needs of the program and the needs of the team and kind of give them a voice. I mean, one of the things I'm figuring out is the more you empower the kids to have some success, the more they want to have success, and they'll buy into the team message. I mean, our big thing all year was, I stole the Bill Withers song. I remember, they did it at USC when Pete Carroll was there, Lean on Me. There's nothing better than to see kids, I had them sing it in the weight room. We sang it on the way to practice every now and then. Heck, we sang it, at a game. We sang it on the way home from our only loss. So we just created a bunch of little things that the kids could kind of latch onto and buy into. And then that leadership council really reinforced it, which was great. And now we've taken it a step further. My freshman coach is actually also our head girls lacrosse coach here. And he's just a heck of a coach. And he and I have spent the better part of the last month developing a curriculum for basically a 9 hour long or a 9 class long leadership course. So that's the next part of it, is we're going to teach kids how to be leaders. The old head coach here, he always said, shame on us for putting the letter C on a kid's jersey and expecting him to act like a captain and know what it means to be a captain. So now we're going to teach him, and we've opened up this course to everyone, everybody and anybody. If all 60 of my kids show up to take it, that's awesome. But you have to have completed the course in order to get elected to the leadership, to be eligible to be elected to the leadership council, and you would have to have been on the leadership council in order to be vetted and elected as a captain later on.
Coach, how have you laid out this course for your potential captains in the leadership council?
Yeah, so, you know, we started out, the first two classes are all about creating core covenants, you know, basically these promises between you and your team and from one team member to another. The next two classes are about, basically it's called Seven Ways to Lead Your Team. The next one, and again, it's all these different concepts of what it means to really be a leader. I mean, I think kids get confused when they start talking about being a leader or being a captain, and they confuse that for being a boss. And that's a totally different scenario. So we try to give them the skills, the tools they need to be a true leader. You know, lead from the front or lead from behind, and they need to know when they need to do both. So that's what we're looking to do.
So, Coach, with the classes, obviously giving them that knowledge is very important. How do you get them to take action? How do you get them to go and then behave like leaders?
Yeah, that's the big thing. I mean, I think the message, you know, for me, and it was great to hear some of our kids say this, you know, when speaking to others, you know, for me, there is no difference. You know, you can't compartmentalize your life. You know, you can't be one kid in the classroom and another kid on the field and another kid in the community. You are who you are, and the situations, you know, tend to reveal who you are all the way through. So one of the things we're trying to get them to recognize, you know, not only through that constant message that they always hear from me, probably three times a week after practice, is to get them to recognize, like, look, there are certain characteristics to being a leader, and we're hopefully going to get that instilled in them. That's the goal here, is that instead of it being a decision, it just becomes a habit. Like, you know, you hear Nick Saban say it all the time, and Nick Saban, you know, he's big on, if you're doing things the right way, there are no decisions to be made. And that's kind of the mentality I'm trying to get across to our guys is, you know, if we're doing things the right way, if we're truly being leaders, then there are no decisions to be made. And you should stand out for the kind of guy you are in the classroom, on the field, and in the community.
Coach, you think that's something that leadership council, the ability to be a captain, you know, do you make the point to your guys that it is not necessarily based on their grade or their age only?
Yeah, you know, I think it's like you had said, alluded to earlier, it's about experience. You know, I don't think we'll ever see, I mean, we have two heck of sophomores, you know, who really took leadership roles amongst the team. You know, one of them was our quarterback and the other one, a tackle who started for us since he was a freshman. And like by all rights, you know, the offensive tackle was probably our most senior lineman coming into this year, so he probably had the most experience. But, you know, I think the kids recognize that, you know, even though how great he is and what a good kid he is, he's still a sophomore. You know, I think there's we call it earning your stripes. And I actually have an assistant coach who's kind of working on a earning your stripes kind of program where we're trying to figure out, like, do we put stripes on their helmet for achieving certain things, certain levels of leadership and character in and around the building. You know, so I think, you know, as far as the title of captain goes, I think there's still the senior idea. But as far as leadership goes, no, I don't think there's an age. I don't think there's anything that goes with it. I don't think there are any prerequisites to being a leader other than knowing how to lead. And it was the prime example was our quarterback this year. He was a first year starter for us as a sophomore. He's 16 years old. And by the end of the year, I mean, you could see he commanded the offense and we were successful because of it. So, you know, hopefully we're going to give more kids the tools to lead, and the less that we have to do as coaches to manage culture, to manage behavior, to manage work ethic, you know, the more successful we can be, because then we could start spending a little bit more time on some football.
Coach, you took the reins of the program and became the head coach a little over a year ago now. With, you know, the success of your first year, obviously it's outstanding to be able to come in and do that right away. And I know part of it is you've been there, so it's not like you were brand new to the program. But, you know, what were some of those, I guess, key decisions you made or the way you tweaked the program to fit your style that you think made a difference for you?
Yeah, a couple things were, you know, and you see this a lot now, you know, increased positivity. Increased positivity was such a big aspect to what we were doing. It was all about, you know, our coaches, we didn't go all the way like the Mark Helfrich route where we didn't yell at all, but everything was positive critique. Everything was positive critique. You know, we evaluated the kids every day with them. Here's where you are today. You know, and the more the kids knew, the more comfortable they felt about their roles. I had one issue this year with a kid as far as he didn't understand his role. And, you know, I said, okay, let me talk to your position coach and I'll get back to you. And we were able to work that out. So that was one idea, was increase positivity and then definitely increase communication. You know, that was another part of it. You know, the more the kids felt like they were being heard, the more likely they were to come out and do what you asked of them. And then probably the last one was that empowering idea. You know, I let them make some decisions, even about practice. It'd be like, hey, you know, going into our bye week, I basically said to them, I'm like, look, here are your options for practice. What would you like to do? And doing so, you know, again, they felt good about themselves. And actually, you know, the other one, now that I'm thinking about it, is we cut way back on, I don't want to say physicality in practice, but we cut way back. We treated it very much almost like the professional football week. We went 2 days in pads, 1 day in uppers, 1 day in helmets for the better part of the second half of the year. But we continued to kind of practice and do what we did. But we definitely scaled back on the contact portion of football as well. So our kids were fresh. You know, we went into the playoffs. We were, for the most part, we were healthy. And that's something to be said after having played a 10-game schedule and, you know, being 14 weeks into the season at that point. So those were probably the big differences that I tried to instill here.
Coach, with you being a defensive coordinator prior to this, did you get involved at all in your offense or what your offense was going to look like?
I did, very much so. You know, I'm a big Gus Malzahn fan, and I love what they do down at Auburn. You know, I had a decent connection down in Texas to when Chad Morris was at SMU. So it was nice to be able to pull from kind of what they're doing at SMU and some stuff from Auburn. And, you know, I believe our personnel year in and year out is conducive to a two back offense. But, you know, I'm a big, you know, two back. We're a power counter team with RPO off of it and play action, quick game, that kind of stuff. So I had been researching this offense, God, probably for about 4 years before this year. So when I was able to take over, you know, I basically sat everybody down and said, look, this is what we're doing offensively. So I was actually, you know, pretty hands-on with the offense. Our offensive line coach, who actually just left us, I had him be our offensive coordinator, and he called a great year. But I had oversight on it as well. You know, I helped game plan on offense as well as I called the defense anyway.
With your coaching staff and the setup of your staff, do your guys coach one side of the ball or both sides of the ball?
No, up here in Connecticut, we got both sides of the ball kind of people. You know, we could only afford to pay so many people. So most of our guys are two-way coaches. We actually have a few who are just one side of the ball. You know, they're volunteers. Basically, we have one guy who coaches just receivers. We have another guy who coaches just quarterbacks. And on the defensive side of the ball, we have a guy who just coaches outside linebackers and a guy who just coaches inside linebackers. But the rest of us are two sides of the ball coaches.
And obviously, there's challenges to that, and that a guy can't focus entirely on one thing. What do you think are, especially for the young and developing coach, some of the advantages to having to be involved on both sides of the football?
You learn football. You know, I think that's just, I think by being involved on both sides of the ball, you get to a better understanding of football. Like, all the way down to football 101, up until, you know, a friend of mine and I always joke about it. We say the best offensive coordinators are defensive guys. And so, you know, I believe that very much. Be like, okay, if I'm an offensive line coach, what better to understand than what the defense is trying to do in the box? You know, if I'm a DB's coach, what better thing to do than understand that, okay, the receiver's going to stem the route like this when he's running a post? You know, if I'm a secondary coach or if I'm a defensive coordinator, what better to understand than, you know, what the quarterback, what the offensive coordinator are thinking when they go into a game? So I really believe if you're a young coach and you're only coaching one side of the ball, you're doing yourself a disservice. And you know, and I think if a head coach limits his guy, you know, now granted, I know at the bigger schools you can afford to have so many coaches, one per position, but I really think that by coaching both sides of the ball, you get a much better understanding of the game. You know, I think X's and O's, anybody can learn X's and O's. I think the hardest part is learning the feel of a football game. And if you are able to work on both sides of the ball, I think you have a better chance at adapting and developing a real good feel for the game earlier in your career.
Yeah, definitely. Coach, I kind of got off track a little bit, but I want to get back to your offense and obviously being an offense that's very similar to what Chad Morris or Gus Malzahn are doing. You know, a lot of power and counter. You know, you mentioned RPO as well. What have you done to build RPO into it?
You know, basically what we did was we looked at it and said, okay, when we're running power, we want a way to put, the inside linebacker in a bind, the outside linebacker in the bind, the corner in a bind, and the safety in a bind. And that's how we went through our entire run game, was we wanted to make sure that we had a RPO in place that could put each one of those players in a bind, that could stress the guys all the way down to the defensive end, what's going to put the defensive end in a bind. So, we wanted the option to say, okay, in this scenario, we want to, the inside linebacker who's stressed, let's stress him even more. Let's run the RPO at him. In this situation, based on this defense, it's the outside linebacker who keeps falling in. All right, let's bubble him. Those kind of things. And I think, again, that's where being a two-way coach really helps, because the defensive guy, I look at and say, okay, it's counter. This is the guy who's stressed here. Let's take advantage of him. So, that was how we went through. And we tried to keep the RPOs incredibly simple. Basically, we say one word, and that applies to one defender. So whether it's off a power or counter, we have a kind of a gut play, which is kind of a bastardized version of our power play. And then we have pledge, which is kind of, that the cue power kind of stuff. Even though we had all these different run games, the front side of the blocking scheme always stayed the same. So our wrinkles were to RPO different people at different times.
Mm-hmm. Now, will you strictly attach RPO to every run, or are you only attaching that some of the time?
We went back and forth with it simply because we had a young quarterback. And, one of the things I learned a long time ago, I had a coach say to me, he said, David, if you want your quarterback to make decisions, be prepared to be okay with him making the wrong one. So if we, if we really felt, all right, look, we want the ball handed off here. If we don't want to put too much of the game on him, we wouldn't RPO for a little while. But, I actually just finished our breakdown this year, and, our simple snag route off of power, we averaged 15.7 yards every time we ran snag. So we were getting that going a little bit. But, it's up to us as offensive play callers to simplify the game and make it manageable for the kid. So, yeah, we probably called RPOs somewhere between, 35, probably, I want to say 30-35% of the time. And the rest was traditional run game.
With the challenges that presents for your quarterback to learn and make decisions, how are you implementing that in practice?
We spend a lot of time on it. We're very fortunate. We have administration and stuff that supports what we do here. So we're able to get our guys together and work on this. So, a lot of our preseason stuff is all based on run game RPOs. And then our quick game, that's what we focus on. That's what we focus on in the preseason. And again, I'm a big guy and, we're going to implement one thing at a time. So, we're going to do power, and then we'll do all of then we'll do counter. Then we'll get into pledge, and then we'll go back and say, okay, now we're doing snag off of all three of those today. So we'll have a whole practice on just running snag. We'll have a whole practice on just running bubble, because we got plenty of time to do it. And then in season, we actually practice it like triple option. We practice it half line, and we've got, we're running our RPOs in both directions. We got two groups going of kids, probably four groups of receivers, four sets of running backs, four of our quarterbacks, and, some on one side, they're running all the RPOs to the right, the other side to the left, we're switching, and we're cycling through. That's a 20-minute segment for us twice a week.
Coach, as you head into 2018, what is it that you feel you guys have to do now to be able to get back there again? I mean, obviously, the weight room's important. All those things are important. But when you look at to go and replicate the success of 2017, what challenges do you face?
The biggest one is to keep kids motivated. We actually had a team meeting yesterday. I had a couple of things to talk to them about. And, you know, one of the things, the questions I asked the team was, what do you have going into next year? And, everybody's like, oh, I have a state championship ring. I have this. And I'm like, and what are you? And like, oh, I'm a successful receiver, successful inside linebacker. And, the next question I asked them was, well, is that enough? Is that enough for you? And, to a man, they all said, no, it's not. And I said, the beautiful thing about life is it's not about being, it's about becoming. What are you going to become? Are you going to become the flash in the pan team that depended on the seniors that left to win the U.S. state championship? Or are you guys the ones that built upon last year's legacy, get us back to where we want to be, and who knows, maybe win us back-to-back state championships and really get something going here. I always talk to him. I said, dynasties are built on the future, not the past. And that's what we're always striving to do. We're trying to bring back the fact that, we've been a football powerhouse for years here, and the last couple years up until this past year, they were just they just weren't where we needed to be. So hopefully we're getting us back. 1 year is never a good indicator. 3 and 5 years are. So, we'll see where we are in 3 years and 5 years. And that's the challenge I presented to them.
Absolutely. Coach, looking back at 17, certainly you guys did a lot of things right to be able to be there and to win it all. But if I asked you to point to one thing that gave you guys the winning edge, one thing you guys do in your program, what would that be?
Good question. That's, for us, I really think, to me, it was really empowering our kids, to basically take ownership of this team and get us back to where we needed to be. I know that sounds cliche, but I really believe that. And to a man, we had great guys out there wanting to get better every week. And, we coach the heck out of effort. We coach the heck out of technique, but there's never a day that we don't take a moment, some point in practice, before practice, after practice, to talk about what it meant to be good men. And I really think that pays off year in and year out. I think that pays off for us. And hopefully, that'll continue to do so.
Well, Coach, it was great to talk ball with you here on the podcast. How can our listeners connect with you? And, if they want to learn or pick up on some of your ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. You either have my email, which is dmastro73@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at dmastro79. I believe I gave you my phone number. I don't care if people call me or text me either. I just like talking football. So, if anybody ever wants to reach out, talk ball or give me ideas, I'm the young guy here. I'm a first year head coach, so I don't have much to share, I don't think, but I do have a lot of time to listen. So I'm more than happy to listen to people who've been doing it a lot longer than me, give me their perspectives on things. And I have to say, a lot of this stuff I stole from other people. But kind of try to make it our own, and hopefully that'll continue to happen.
Coach, best of luck to you guys in 2018. Congrats on those twins you just had. I know that's going to be an added challenge for you during the season as well. Lots of diapers to change now. So,
yeah, thank God I have a good wife.
Hey, always appreciate talking ball with you. Thanks for taking the time today, and we'll catch up again sometime,
sir.
I'm sure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.